He's so rigid.
There's a requirement before you can do the third step prayer. We talk about it. Are you convinced that life run on self-will can hardly be a success? It's a yes or no answer. Pretty simple. Third step prayer. I'm not even going to read the whole thing. Understand what it says. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Again, did it say relieve me of the bondage of the alcohol or cocaine? No, because that's not the problem. It's our selfishness that's the problem. Take away my difficulties. Why? So I can get rich? Take away my difficulties so victory over these are going to bear witness to those I would help. Of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. I mean, how cool is that prayer? See, but this is what we're supposed to be going back into meetings talking about, folks. I'm going to bear witness to you how my life has changed as a result of working the steps. Make sense? I hear people all the time talking about, Christians say from the podium, you make it sound like all these meetings should be pep rallies.
Yes.
They should. Because my life is not the same as it was 17 years ago. It's not the same as it was. I mean, 2 weeks into this, my life had started to change. And that's the stuff I'm supposed to be going back into meeting, sharing with a newcomer. Because all that newcomer wants is some hope. Can I share some hope? Or do I just want to share a few war stories with them and get a little identification going? Big deal. You know? We're all bozos on this bus. Have we got that figured out yet? Yes? Okay. Now, can you share some hope? How can I get off this damn runaway bus? See, that's what we're supposed to try to do. It's the coolest. Myers is talking about a 32-page four-step. I've got an 81-page four-step guide sitting on my desk at work. 81 pages. We have just a few minutes here, and I want to kind of show you what this is about, talking about this four-step. Again, we were talking about it earlier. We share the podium with lots of different speakers, and lots of speakers, they want to really make this step business quite complicated. It's just not that complicated. In fact, I'm going to say this from the podium. I really don't care how you work these steps, as long as you work them. Everybody wants to, you know, we've got... They want to complicate it so much that most of us just lose interest after a while. It gets to be more weight than it's worth. It's as simple, this four-step stuff. You sit in a meeting now, anywhere in the States, you sit in a meeting and say, I'm working on a four-step. And everybody goes, they groan. You know, they go, oh. And it's like, oh, you poor, I know what you're going through. And it's like, buddy, you've missed the boat. A fourth step is the most freeing step I've ever done in my life. It was the coolest, and it took me a couple of days to knock out. Once I got some instructions on how to do it, if it takes you longer than a few hours to do a fourth step, you are so full of yourself, it's not even funny. Yeah.
What is this?
What? It's in the podium.
It's there.
It's a little deal. I want to show you something.
One of the things that the problem is in this work, this ego that I drew up there, the whole purpose of all the steps is to deflate our ego. I don't want to be less than you. I spent my life looking down at the floor. I don't want to be less than you, but I don't have any right to be better than you either. And if I'm sitting up here looking down at you, I don't like this podium. I'd rather be on the floor with you guys. But if I think by some way that I'm better than you because I'm 17 years sober or better looking than some of you, I am so wrong at that. You see, I just want to be on the same level with the rest of you knuckleheads. That's all I want. A man among men is what we talk about. I've spent my life walking into groups of people and either feeling less than or better than. You know what I'm saying? I started out drinking in these big cool bars in Houston, Texas. These nice big, you know, dress up and nice going there and nice. And I ended up drinking at a bar called the Jolly Rogers in Lake Dallas, Texas. Can y'all imagine this? A bar named the Jolly Rogers, and I'm walking in there with, how many ass whippings do you think I took in that bar? You know? Pirate jokes abounded. And why am I in that bar? It's a seedy bar. It's a terrible bar. It's the kind of bar where you lean over and puke on the floor and the guy throws you a towel to clean it up. You know, and it's like, it's. But I felt superior in that bar. You follow? My ego is huge. This ego can go from, everybody thinks somebody that's egotistical is, well, he's just so full of himself. You with me? But look, follow the thread down at the other end of the spectrum. And now you've got this, I'm just a worthless piece of shit. I have many ailments and I'm... I'll feel better in a minute. These goddamn victims. These victims. You victim. And the AA is full of victims. It is not okay to be a victim. It is on the same spectrum with the egotistical son of a gun that thinks he doesn't need to do anything because he's better than everybody. I can take those egomaniacs and bust them in a heartbeat. I can deal with them all day long. But I'm going to tell you something, folks. Having been a victim all my life, I know how to work that system. Y'all with us? And they're the toughest people to deal with. Right? You with me? About the time you want them to start doing some work. Well, I started working on the fourth step and all of my childhood memories started coming back. And so so what do we do? Oh, okay, sorry. We'll work on that next month. You go take care of yourself. Take a little bubble bath now and everything's going to be okay. You see, we got to understand. Some of you are looking at me like I've just slapped you. You think I'm making fun of that? No. I'm saying a fourth step is completely different than that. A fourth step is not about looking at your history and all the bad things that ever happened to you. A fourth step is a fact-finding mission. It's an inventory so that we can get rid of the stuff that's not working. You with us? You guys take the line out of context out of the book and think that this is some kind of a life story. It is not. Let me say this from the podium here in beautiful Denmark. I don't give a rat's ass about your history. It is boring. You're enamored with it. You can't wait to talk about it. But that's what we've done all our life. Remember the line, selfish and self-centered to the core? You know? Let's talk about me for a while, you know? That's what I did. No! We're going to go in there and we're going to look at this fourth step and this fact-finding. I was over in Seattle, near Seattle, a couple of weeks ago, and there was this old guy, he's about 46 years sobriety. It was amazing, this old coot. And he got up, this old geezer, and he's sharing about his story. When he first got sober, the first week he got sober, his sponsor met him at the job site and said, "Buddy, it's time that we get started on the fourth step. You with us?" And everybody in the room, there was about 200 people, and everybody laughed. They thought that was the most funniest thing they'd ever heard. You know, that was the punchline of the night. You know, and only people that weren't laughing were all the little big book thumpers that were sitting on the back row with me. And we're looking at each other like, what's the joke there? Because he's exactly on time. First week of sobriety, great time to work on a fourth step. Let's finish this work. Inventory is this. It's a little four column in the book. It shows three. You could explode it to four. A little four column resentment inventory. Let me make a list of the people I'm pissed at. There's a little simple fear inventory. I'm sorry. Two columns. I'm afraid of this because of this. That's it. You with me? Simple. You want to do an eight column fear inventory? Go ahead. We're just looking at the fear. Sex inventory. Got nothing to do with sex. It has to do with how am I treating the opposite sex. You with me? Beth could do, my friend from England, she could do a sex inventory and I could sit down and hear her sex inventory and neither one of us would ever blanch. because we're not there to talk about the act of sex. I don't care if you're poking sheep. It's got nothing to do.
It's cows in Denmark.
It's cows in Denmark. No, that's not. The book doesn't say, list all the terrible things you've done when you were loaded acting out sexually. It says, where did you treat people with disrespect? Where did you unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness? Make sense? We're gonna drop this stuff down and we're going to look at it. Why is it that I treat all the women the same? I think everybody's the same. It's not. They're all the same. I treat them the same way. Why? I need to stop treating them that way. I need to start treating them with respect. And I can see that from that sex inventory. It's so quite simple. We can sit down later this afternoon and I can show you exactly what I'm talking about. Resentment inventory is the one you guys get stuck on because you're so busy trying to make this life story. Make a list. Let me ask you a question. We go in the store next door and we say, we want to do an inventory of your store. Well, what are we going to do? Go out and look at the garbage and this crap they threw away? Or are we going to look at the stuff on the shelves? Inventory is current shit. Current stuff. I make this list and I'm spending weeks. What are you doing? I'm working on my fourth step. What are you doing? I'm working on my fourth step. 6 months later, I'm working on my fourth. No, you're not. You're spinning your wheels because the truth of the matter is you don't really think you're one of us. If you've had a first step experience and you understand the necessity to have a spiritual experience, you're going to get this stuff cleaned out and you're going to get it cleaned out in a hurry. I need to go look at current resentments. Guys, sit down. I heard a guy from the podium one time. If you haven't got at least 200 resentments on your inventory, you're not doing a thorough job. That is rubbish. Most of us in this room don't even know 200 people, much less resent them. Come on, guys. What's a resentment? A resentment is an anger you're holding on to. You know, your second grade teacher embarrassed you in class. You think about that second grade teacher and say, boy, she was a loser. And you go on to the next one. Why are you going to put her down and do a four-column inventory on that teacher? Wait, does she really piss you off? It was 40 years ago. Why are you wasting your time? You think this is an exercise in writing? It's not. I'd rather see you cats sit down with a piece of paper and write down your 10 biggies right now. My employer, my significant other, my kids, the people that are driving you crazy right now, driving down the road, you're thinking, grinding your teeth on them. Those are the ones we're supposed to write down. If you've got to sit there and think and meditate, oh God, please show me the people I'm resentful. You don't have to have God's help to show you the people you're resentful at. Guys, it's forefront in your head. Write that stuff down. You got 10 resentments? Write it down. People, institutions, and principles that you're pissed at. It is stop making a big deal out of this. If you think of somebody 6 months from now, do another little inventory on it. It's just no big deal. I put the guy's name in the first column, second column. I list why I'm pissed, right? I'm pissed at her. Why?
She said no.
Again. Third column. I look at the areas of my life that are affected. My ambitions, my security, you know, my self-esteem.
How did this hurt me?
You with me? First column, victim. Second column, victim. Third column, victim. Can we stop now? We finally get to the fourth column where we look at our part. Our part. Where was I selfish to the core? Where have I been fearful? Where have I been dishonest? You with us? See, if I can see that I've got a little part of this, I can get free. If I continue to blame them for why I can't be happy, first column, her. Second column, she said no. Third column, you with me? Affected all seven areas of my life because I'm totally affected by sex. Big? Unlike my spiritual brother. Okay. Fourth column. What's my part? What's the truth? Why did she say no? Well, could have been the way you acted, right? How did you ask? How did you treat her? You with us? Remember that thing you said that wasn't quite appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you taking her needs into consideration, you selfish bastard? You know? Are you? No, 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 no. I get to see my part in the fourth column, and I get immediately free from the resentment. She's not hurting me. She's not out to get me. It's all in my head. Remember what the book said? These things people have done to us, fancied are real. Most of us in here are running from stuff that didn't even happen. It happened in here. Isn't that right? And we just look at this stuff and we can get free. Everything in my life I can look at in that four-column inventory and I can get free from. And I don't care if it's a simple resentment about a boss that fired me or molestation. You can look at your part and get free. We can stop being a victim. It's the most unbelievable exercise I've ever done in my life. I'm going to say this again. We'll move on. Victims don't get sober. And I'm going to talk about this in the morning. But I want to tell you right now, I'm so honored to know everyone of you in here. And I am so clear that so many of us have been hurt. And I'm not making light of any of that. I'm just saying that hurt is not who you are. You're a beautiful child of God. You're a powerful individual who some bad things happen to. And who's going to get past that? Some of you cats are waiting for people to come up out of the grave to apologize to you for shit they did to you. Let me be the first to mention this to you. It ain't going to happen. What do we do? We got this inventory. Maybe it's got 20 names on it. Maybe it's got 50 names. Who knows? We got a little fear inventory. We got the sex inventory. We get with our sponsor. We dump the stuff. And the sponsor's going to do one thing. He's going to help you see your truth. He's going to sleep through the first three columns while you go on and on. I need to explain this one. You know what I mean? Why you talk about it, you know? And then he's going to wait patiently for you to get to the fourth column so you can own your part. See, how did you place yourself in that position to be hurt? See, and this guy can do this. When I sit down and do a fifth step, I've got a piece of paper in front of me and I'm making two lists. One, I'm making an eight-step list for you. People that I think you possibly need to make amends to. And I'm also making a character defect list in 6 and 7. You'll follow us? So if I hear something that keeps repeating itself, the fear, the dishonesty, your laziness, sloth, I'm going to make this little list over here. So because right after this fifth step, we're going to do 6 and 7. Isn't that right? The book says right after. Third step prayer says we launched out our course of vigorous action to do the fourth step. We finish it, dump a fifth step, 6 and 7, an hour later. I'm working on 6 and 7. It's 2 freaking paragraphs in the book, guys. How much is there to work on? You're not the one that's going to remove these character defects. I don't care what anybody says. It's God that removes those character defects. You've just got to be clear on what they are so you can be conscious of it when it takes place. I've got my list in 6 and 7. You with us? I've got my 8-step list. I took it from my 5th step. I've got it ready to go. I sit with my sponsor and we're ready to go make amends. Boom, boom, boom. Quickly. It's so difficult for people to understand. Bill Wilson worked the steps in 9 days. Dr. Bob took 2 weeks. Who in the hell do you think you are? Oh, really? You just think you're extra bad? I mean, you know what, Damien? This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. 6 and 7, we do that. We got the 8-step list. We go make the amends. We're kicking butt. We're praying and meditating already because my sponsor had me doing that from day one, talking about prayer and meditation. We're going to touch on that after lunch. And we're going to spend most of the little time we have this afternoon, we're going to talk about working with others because we believe quite clearly, like a lot of y'all, that it's the most important step that gets overlooked. And then we're going to do a little Q&A. Does that sound good? So right now we're going to go to lunch. My replacement. Welcome, my name is Chris Bramer. I'm an alcoholic. I'm one of those recovered alcoholics. Yeah. Great break. Interesting. Thanks for lunch. It was good. Don't have a clue what I ate. It was excellent. It was excellent. I tell you. Interesting talking to some of y'all this, for some of you that weren't here this morning, I want to cover a little bit what we talked about and kind of make sure we get all back on the same page, and then we want to kind of spend most of this hour talking about working with others. But interesting when we sit and visit with you guys after, we talk from the podium and y'all laugh at the right times and nod your head at the right times, and you think they're getting it. And you walk off the podium and it's like, let me ask you a question. It's like, what are you hearing me say? You know, it's like, do I want you to go back into your AA groups, and the first time somebody says something that's not in the big book, you go eat their ass and pick a fight, and you know, you can't do, you know, it's like, buddy, that's not what we're doing here. That's not what we're saying. We're saying each in our own individual ways are going to carry this message in our own ways. What we're trying to ask you to possibly look at is some absolute truth here. One, recovery rate 70 years ago was damn good. Recovery rate today is damn poor. You with us? That's a fact. That's true. Most people that come to Alcoholics Anonymous don't stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. And any of you guys that have been around longer than 6 months have watched this door go both ways, in and out and in and out. Why aren't they staying? Is it etched in stone how long it's supposed to take to work these steps? Absolutely not. You've got some guy that's all detoxed out and he's loaded on pills, and it's just maybe you can't work him through quite as fast as somebody that's maybe not as physically damaged. But this idea that anything goes and you can work this through. I mean, we were laughing about it at lunch. This line that we just read in Reading How It Works, it's like, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. You with us? That's always translated, take your time to work the steps. That freaks me. You know, we're sitting there talking to Myers. My wife wants me to be thorough washing the dishes. She doesn't like food left on the dishes. I mean, it's kind of small of her, I know. But, you know, she wants me to be thorough. But she doesn't want me to take all night doing it. I think it's a great analogy. If the spiritual experience, we just read it in the ABCs, ABC, that no human power can fix what's wrong with me. Not a sponsor can fix what's wrong with me. Therapy, treatment, nothing's going to fix what's wrong with me. That God could and would if He were sought. Our only job is to get you cats connected to this power as fast as we can. If you've got 6 months to sit out there and work these steps and just get comfortable, welcome. Have a nice life. I mean, I don't want to split hairs with this, and I don't want to beat this to death, but I'm sorry, guys. Thank God Bill Wilson didn't have that information. Thank God Bill Wilson worked those steps in 9 days. He's in detox working on his ninth step from the hospital when he has his barn-burning spiritual experience. Dr. Bob. Remember the story, Dr. Bob? Finishes his last drink on June 10th. Drives around town, makes his amends. The one step he wouldn't do. He makes the amends, never drank again. 2 weeks. But you can sit here and tell me about the way you do it in your country, where we take 6 months to finish it. Well, I think that's a bit presumptuous of all of us. And then when the poor cat relapses, we want to drop it back in their lap. Well, they just didn't want it. They just weren't ready. Sure they were. Maybe they didn't have the tools to get well. Maybe they... That's pretty rigid. I apologize if I'm offending somebody. But I mean, you know, you can justify why your way is okay. And you have every right to do it your way. But what we had to start looking at, when I got into the treatment center deal 10 years ago, we started looking at our very poor success rates. And one of the reasons was people were dragging their feet to finish this work. It's working with others that keeps us sober. That's what the book says. But we won't let you work with others until you work the steps. But you can't work the steps until you've been sober a year. Guys, do you see something wrong here? It's like holding a carrot out. One day you'll be well. One day you'll be well. That day needs to be today. That's why we're simplifying this. That's why the steps were intended. They're so simple. Ask a question, do the work. Ask a question, do the work. Boom, you're finished. I want to work the steps the rest of my life. I'm 17 years sober. I do a couple of 4 steps every year. You with us? Every time I sponsor somebody, I take them through the work. I do the work myself. It's the coolest. Thank God I had sponsorship early on, though, that didn't let me sit on my butt and just gradually get sick again, and I'd go out and drink. That's all I got right now. You want to do this? Yeah, just take my 9 minutes. Howdy, Buckaroos. My name is Myers Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic. I guess by now you know that. I have some stuff that I made some copies of, and I'm going to leave it with some of these cats that you guys can make copies of them. But my hope is that y'all make copies of this stuff, and then you can sit down some cold night, which is every night, and look through this stack of stuff, and you can go, that shit, and just throw it away, and then maybe there'll be something in there that you'll like and you'll keep, and it'll be important to you on down the road. These are just things that I've collected over the long haul about various things. But one of these things in here that I find of interest every time I look at it, you can look at this little piece when I'm done, is a list of desire chips. Do they do that in Denmark where they give you a desire chip when you come in for the first time? Well, in the States, they always do this stuff. You sober up and you go in and you say, okay, I'm ready to start this deal. And they give you a little silver medallion and a desire chip. And then and theoretically, you're supposed to pick up one desire chip and stay, and that's going to be the deal. But for years, what they've been doing in the States is tracking the success rate of Alcoholics Anonymous based on desire chips, one-year chips, two-year chips, three-year chips, blah, 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 and down the road. You see, that's the only way that we can really get some grip. It's not scientific and it's not foolproof, but it gives us some basis of seeing how successful we are. It's funny, this man comes into AA and his buddies stay sober right around him, and so you got 5 or 6 people and they're staying sober for the next several years, and he's going, I don't see anything wrong. We're all sober here. But while he's sober, there's thousands of you out there falling off by the wayside, not staying sober. You see? And so our perceptions of AA get skewed, and we begin to get very defensive when guys like us from the United States come in and say there's a problem in our midst. There's a fox in the hen house, so to speak. I mean, and so all I want you to, what this is a graphic illustration of how far we have strayed from the message, and the direct manifestation, the direct results is that we've got people not getting sober. Somebody at a meeting that we were in the other night when we got here said something about somebody had told him 90 meetings in 90 days. That's the mantra in the United States. Every newcomer is told that. I want you to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I said it for years to people. According to these stats, and these are 2,000 stats that I have right here, there were 21,000, round it off, 21,000 desire chips given in 2000. This is in Dallas, Texas, okay, in just in Dallas. 3 months later, 90 days later, there's only 3,600 people picking up three-month chips. That's only 17% of us stayed 90 days. You skip on down to 9 months, 10%, 1 year, 6.8%. 6%. Now, you do the math on that thing, that's 1,000, that's almost 20,000 people that picked up desire chips that went bye-bye. Now you can't stand there and say that all those 20,000 people didn't want this program. They didn't want to recover. They did want to recover, guys. Many of those people did want this thing, but they simply could not get it because the message had been so convoluted and watered down, and we didn't hold anybody accountable, and we didn't help them do what they needed to do. In groups like I'm from in Dallas, Texas, where we have refocused our efforts on studying the Big Book and then 12-step work, we've seen a huge resurgence. Our figures aren't anywhere like this. Most everybody that comes stays. Most everybody comes and does the work recovers. I mean, it's very rare to see somebody in our group go back out again because we're so diligent to get them through the stuff. We were doing what we were supposed to be doing all along, carrying a clean, concise message of recovery that the book gave us. Let me mention something. This is just a little aside on this thing about accountability and about... You guys know what accountability means? It's like everybody likes the concept of accountability until they're the ones being held accountable. And then everybody gets real grindy about it. You know, it's like I've been asked 1,000 times, would you be my sponsor? Sure, I'll be delighted to. It'll be my honor. Let's do this and this and this. And by the way, I'm going to hold you accountable to do this and this and this. And then there's dead silence. And then there's this kind of shuffling of their feet. And then they're gone. You see? The truth is that people don't want to submit to the work and don't want to do what we're doing. And that's the grindy part. And some of you guys are sponsoring cats right now that are doing the same thing. You know, they say they want you to help them. You get involved, and then all of a sudden they start disappearing, or they start putting distance between you and the work. And anyway, let's drag them up close and let's see what we can do. I find it interesting that the last part of this work, steps 10, 11, and 12, we trivialize this stuff a huge amount, and we you know, we get so focused in with our new guys that we're working with on steps 3 and 4 and 5, and we're going to do all of this kind of stuff. And the amends thing is a huge deal. We're going to get in there and we're going to go do these amends and whatnot. But when we get around this thing of 10, 11, and 12, because they're not demanding immediate action, nobody's sitting there saying, do this now kind of thing, we tend to hold them at some distance, you see. It's funny, over the years, if I'm sponsoring a guy, and he gets goofy, he calls me on the phone and he's sounding crazy, I don't ask him how many meetings he's going to. I don't ask him. I ask him the same question over and over and over again. I want to know today, how much time did you spend with God, and how much time did you spend working with another alcoholic? Because those two things guarantee your sobriety and guarantee your happiness. It guarantees the quality of everything that you have in your life. You see, and we have to get focused on that. And it's a funny thing. Sometimes we get so busy doing things like going to meetings and stuff that we lose sight of the fact that there is a God at the pinnacle of this that's controlling the whole picture. When the gentleman a minute ago read chapter 5, on page 164, there's a line in there that said, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Constantly disclose. Isn't it an interesting concept that if God is constantly disclosing information to us, why are we always so baffled about what we're supposed to be doing? We got millions of us out there doing this number, scratching our head going, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. I don't know what actions to take. All of that head scratching is directly back to this inability to stay plugged in to God in step 11 work every day. It's funny, you got a guy with a blowtorch on his rear. His wife's giving him a fit. His employer's giving him fits. His kids are all, you know, his world is in chaos. And we get these guys that are spiritual giants. They don't ever stop praying because they know they get all connected up. Fast forward a couple of months. The wifey poo's back in the bedroom again. The job thing is kind of smoothed out a little bit. And now all of a sudden, we can't find time to pray. We can't find time to meditate. Dr. Bob wrote a great essay one time about the importance of 11-step work of prayer and meditation. And he said in this thing, and I'm paraphrasing it, I don't have it here in front of me, we could do without the meeting, we could do without most of this stuff, but we could not do without prayer and meditation. And yet as a fellowship, we trivialize it as it's just something that's there if you want to do it. If you're questioning God's will for you in your life, pray. Meditate. Spend time. Not running your yap to God. Sit there still and be quiet. If you're having trouble with meditation, come see me. Or walk right down that street if you live here. 2 blocks down there, there's a yoga meditation place. Can help you with everything you need to know about meditation. They're great guys. I just met them. You see? Well, anyway. One more little aside, then I'll get back on track. I wanted to read this little piece to you. There were some guys that I was talking to at break that were talking about
their group was real adamant about the discussion stuff, about needing to air our problems in the confines of the meeting. And I know we hit that pretty hard, and we're pretty straightforward about it. I wanted to make sure that you guys understood from what I was saying last night. I encourage you to share your problems in your day and this kind of stuff, but I encourage you to share it with your sponsor, not with a group, because it takes up valuable recovery time. The new guy doesn't need to hear that you are a year sober and still having trouble in this deal. They don't need to hear that. Your sponsor needs to hear it so he can get you back into work. That's where it's supposed to be. But of interest, I want somebody, these men that I was talking to specifically, I want to read this little piece right here. Bill Wilson wrote this thing in a letter in 1966, and it said, an AA group, as such, cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone those of non-alcoholics in the world around us. The AA group is not, for example, a mediator of domestic relations, nor does it furnish personal financial aid to anyone. Though a member may sometimes be helped in such matters by his friends in AA, the primary responsibility for the solutions of all his problems of living and growing rests squarely upon the individual himself. Should an AA group attempt this sort of help, its effectiveness and energies would be hopelessly dissipated. Dig? We clear on this? Let's get back to the main deal. Let's get back to making newcomers feel excited about being in recovery. You see? Remember the story in A Vision for You where there was this cat that was talking about, am I to be boring and glum like some people I know? Is there any man and woman in this room that didn't ask that question when they sobered up? The big question, the common thread that ran through every one of you, you and me both, is there a solution that is sufficient enough to keep me clear of the booze? We asked that. Is there a sufficient substitute? And the answer is yes, there is. And we need to make sure that the new guy that comes in knows that the substitute is there, that recovery is cool and exciting. I talked at a place down South Texas one time, and I remember walking into this group, and these people were like, I didn't know whether I was in a funeral or in an AA meeting. They were the most glum lot I have ever met in my life. They were totally miserable. Nobody was smiling. Nobody was laughing. Nobody was happy. It was just a veil of tears. And I talked for an hour and got down, and this lady walks up to me and she said, I had no idea recovery could be like that. And I wanted to weep. I just wanted to cry. They're missing everything. Guys, let me tell you something. If you're baffled today by this stuff, if you're still glum and depressed and getting the crap kicked out of you by this spiritual stuff on this thing, please come see me and let's get you back on track. And the handshake, the secret handshake that's going to connect every dot of all of this stuff is this 12-step work. And I'll talk briefly on that. And Chris will finish that stuff up and then we can do some Q&A kind of stuff and this sort of thing. We talked about this stuff briefly last night, but guys, I'm telling you, we want to hold all of this work at a distance. There are two types of people in Alcoholics Anonymous and in NA and CA and every other fellowship I've ever been involved with. You have those people that will embrace the newcomer and understand what our primary purpose is, which is to carry the message. And you have those that feel like they have reached nirvana because they got sober and they're going to just stay there in their own little island. And we become introverted, we become so self-absorbed that we can't reach out to the new man that walked in the room. I did a talk in a room one night, was doing the steps, and I walked in. As I'm doing this, this man walks in, stands in the middle of the room, and just stands there. It's not my home group. This is somebody else's group, okay? There's 40 people in the room, and this man is just standing there. Hugely uncomfortable. He's sweating profusely. He's nervous. He doesn't know really what he's even doing there. I mean, he's just one of those classic, well, I finally got up enough nerve to walk in. He didn't know it was a step study that night. He didn't know I was going to be talking. And he's just standing there. And I'm thinking every molecule in my body is saying, please, somebody go grab that man. Don't let him just stand there and sweat. You know what? There wasn't one person do any of that. They stood there and they let that man stand in the middle of that room until he was so uncomfortable and he started to turn away. And you know what? I could not stand it. I stopped what I was doing, stepped down off that podium, went over there and hugged him and set him down. And we did it. Everybody was too afraid to do something, to make a stand, to feel uncomfortable, everybody's in their own little comfort deal, and nobody wants to reach out, you see?
Well, I already paid my dues. I walk in, I remember feeling that comfortable.
Where's the empathy? Where's the love? Where is the, I want to weep thinking about it. It wasn't 30 minutes later, towards the end of this talk, a girl that had been sitting in that room with a t-shirt on and a pair of shorts, got up and walked out. Less than 20 seconds later, longer than that, maybe a minute later, this same girl walked back in with no shorts on and nothing on except that t-shirt. I don't know. I mean, she's obviously stoned. And she had walked back out, and I don't know what was going on out there, but she walked back in with very little on. And I'm still trying to carry on this conversation from the podium, you see? And once again, I'm going, God, will anybody help this woman? 16 women in that room sat there and watched her bend over and show everything that she had and fumble around. And she finally sat down on this couch and passed out. And there wasn't a woman in there helped her. Nobody. After the meeting, she got up and walked for the door. I'm going, ladies, don't you do this. She walked outside. Guess what happened? A guy follows her outside. Ha! Classic. Classic. So here we have a woman practically naked in the room walking out, and there's nobody from that home group that's going to help her. But some guy's going to help her. You betcha. Well, you can imagine what happened. It was not pretty, and I got right in the middle of it, and we carried her for treatment that night. Why do I relate these stories? Because, guys, in your own little world, your AA may be perfect. In your own world, things may be groovy. But out there in the whole world, guys, there is some cesspool AA with people floundering, not having any clue what their primary purpose is. The book is clear. Tradition 5 told us. Our primary purpose is to carry this message in this book to a recovering out to somebody that needs help, whether it's a drug addict or an alcoholic. Those traditions state that. So let's go out there and do it. And if we have questions of how to do it, we need to get into this book and understand how to do it. And that's what this whole thing is about. And as you begin to do that, I'm so frustrated. I get 100 emails a month from men and women who email me telling me how frustrated they are that they have no fellowship around them that wants to do what we do. And my answer is always the same. Why wait? Why wait for an entire group to change when you can change it? Listen, where we're going to change 12-step work is one man at a time, one woman at a time. That's how it is. This man right here is going to stand in a meeting and he's going to share something. And this man's going to go, I like that. I like, and he's going to walk over after the meeting and he's going to say something to this guy. And this guy's going to say, here's what we're going to do. And they get a game plan together and they're going to work through this work and they're going to do it. Now you've got two of them. Pretty soon you've got three of them. Pretty soon you've got four of them. Now you've got four men walking lockstep through the work, all plugged in, all excited about what's getting ready to happen. You got a bunch of other guys out there taking cheap shots at them, but it's no big deal. I can stand the arrows. I can stand it all. I have three friends right here that believe just like I do. And the next time group conscience rolls around, guess what we're going to do? Instead of having 20 discussion meetings a week, we're going to vote one of those discussion meetings out and put a good old big book study in there. Oh, yeah. There's a start. We are not going to affect change from the podium. We're going to affect change one man at a time. As we sponsor, I'm a strong sponsor and I'm going to sponsor my men and they're going to be strong sponsors and their men are going to be strong sponsors and they're going to all know what their responsibilities are to their AA group, to AA as a whole, and more importantly at times to their families and friends. They're going to understand what it is it means to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it does not mean just not drinking. It means we're going to change and we're going to be the men that we were supposed to be. That's what it means. Chris, you can have the rest of this. Thank you, buddy. I mean, how can you add to that? In the morning, when y'all hear me tell my story, I come from a place of nearly dying in this fellowship, not hearing that message. And it was pretty emotional for me to have finally gotten it and realized that there was another way. 12th step is not an option. See, 12th step is what it's all about. And can I put this? When Ebby first 12-step Bill Wilson over in the front, and Bill's story talks about on page 14 in our text, he said, "My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without work was dead," he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. "For if the alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through prayer," is that what it said? No, damn sure didn't. It said spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he couldn't stay sober. Means that I don't have a choice. If I'm going to keep this spiritual experience that God gave me, I'm going to have to continue to give it away. That's what it says. It also says over here on page 129 in Family After, some of you nice folks that are visiting us from out on, I'm probably more familiar with these pages than some of us in the regular fellowship. It says quite simple, "Even if he displays a certain amount of neglect and irresponsibility towards the family, it's well to let him go as far as he likes in helping other alcoholics. During those first days of convalescence, this will do more to ensure his sobriety than anything else." Did y'all get it? During his first days of convalescence. That means while he's still drying out, folks. That means while he's still working the steps. Working with others is going to do more to help him stay sober than anything else. This is what the book said, folks, written 70 years ago. And then we've got the audacity to come in here and tell you that after 6 months you can work with somebody else. Excuse me? You don't work with somebody else, you may not make 6 months. That was my experience. Because that's the one thing that changed when I got back into this fellowship in 1987. I'm looking forward to telling you my story. No, I'm not. I'm dreading it like some bitch. That's the truth. Because I'm going to scald some of you, and I don't want to do that. All we've been talking about here is sharing our viewpoints from where this is at. You know, you don't have to do it this way. I get, like Myers, I get lots of emails and phone calls from all over the country. Those tapes travel everywhere, you know, and so you get calls from, everywhere. And it's like, how do you handle boredom in AA? Big question I get asked. Excuse me? I don't have time to go pee, much less get bored, you know, in AA. I mean, there's so much work to be done. I mean, how can you get bored sitting in a room watching some guy you're doing the work with and watching the lights come on and watching him carry the message to somebody else? How can you see a fellowship sitting the other night, Thursday night, I guess we went to a men's meeting, right after we got off a plane, we were just dead. And sitting in this men's meeting, this AA meeting, and it's just like, it was so cool to listen to these guys share. And they were all excited and they were laughing. Everybody's laughing. And they were, you know, how y'all do it here. And this, I'm practically a chant when you read, you know, and it was just gorgeous. It was just, how can you get bored watching people passionate about their new lives? You wake up in the morning and you get this intuitive thought to call somebody, and you call them, and all of a sudden there's a new job in line, and the miracles start to take place, and you're going to tell them you're bored. You know why you're bored? Because you're not doing the work. Because you're not in the trench. You're missing it. Because you think this is all about just staying sober one day at a time. Guys, we travel around and I share this from the podium, and every time I talk about this, you guys laugh. So why are we perpetuating this nonsense? Why do we keep talking about it? Well, just one day at a time. One day at a time. Do you realize that we're the butt of a million jokes out there? Alcoholics Anonymous is the butt of a million jokes. We've got organizations on the internet right now that are determined to destroy AA. And everything they're using in there is based on the falsehoods of AA. One of the lead lines on the internet I was looking at the other day. Because Alcoholics Anonymous professes that we'll be sick forever, we have this other organization over here that you can actually get well in. Y'all with me? AA you can get well in. But because we've got people sitting in meetings sharing misinformation about always being sick, y'all down with this? You can recover from alcoholism, folks. That's what the book promises. I asked a guy out here a minute ago. We were talking, and he was talking about being sober for a period of time, but he was still thinking about cocaine. He was still thinking about alcohol. I said, buddy, let me ask you a question. How many times in my 17 years of sobriety do you think I've thought hard about taking a drink? And he says, oh, many. Not one. Not one. Not one. Because the miracle of the spiritual experience took place in my life. And I've stayed active. I've stayed involved. That's what happens when you stay involved. The obsession of use stays away. Because you know when the obsession of use returns, I'm going to go use. See, that's the miracle of this. This is for keeps. But the whole thing is set in motion by finishing the work. And then you work with others and give it away, and the miracle takes place. We can beat this to death, folks, but there's no sense in that. I mean, it's just that simple. If you've been in this fellowship longer than a few months and you're not sponsoring somebody, you need to really start asking yourself why. Are you making yourself available to that cat? Are you going to those jitter joints? We were in a treatment center yesterday, day before. A bunch of people in there looking for sponsors. Where are you? Make sense? I don't think so. I think so. A nice lady in the treatment center said it was just so good. She says, how can I help anybody else if I can't even help myself? I hear it all the time. You're finally getting it now, guys. You can't help yourself. It's by helping the newcomer that I get helped. See how that works? You're not going to believe it till you try. You're not going to believe it till you try. I can see some of you rolling your eyes. Contempt prior to investigation. I hope you get on this path with us. We sure need you out there in the trenches. We're gonna go take a smoke and come back and answer some questions. How's that? That sound good? Okay.